Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psochim Daf Nun. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur three lines from the top of Daf Nun. Before we begin the actual Gemara, on the side we have a title, a topic heading, we call the Nosei, where we've written Yerushalayim Be'osid U'Ve'Oilam Habo. We will be discussing some possibly esoteric topics concerning the future times of Yerushalayim. Now, you might be asking, why are we discussing Yerushalayim? So, Rashi reveals the answer in that the Mishnah made reference to one who was carrying sacrificial meat and he left Yerushalayim. So, since we spoke about the departure from Yerushalayim, the Gemara feels that it's appropriate to discuss further topics of Yerushalayim, and in this case, Yerushalayim in the future. So our Gemara, three lines from the top. V'hoya b'yom ha'hu lo ye'or yikoros v'kipa'on. And it will be in that day, and this is of course a reference to sometime in the future, that there won't be or yikoros v'kipa'on. Now that needs to be explained. My yikoros v'kipa'on. What is meant by that? Now, you'll notice we have triangles, three names, and on the side, under our mivneh, our structural note, we've written Gimel Pirushim, three explanations al haposuk or yikoros v'kipa'on. We also want to note that Oysom Gimel Amoroyim Behemshech al haposuk Metzilos Hasus. These Amoroyim will appear later when the Gemara darshans Pasuk a little bit later in this 14th parak of Zechariah. Here we're darshaning Pasuk Vav. Later we will be darshaning Pasuk Chof. So the three names, you can see Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yoshua, and Levi, they will appear later, albeit in a different order. So our question is, what does this mean, this or, the light of Yekoros and Kipaon? Amar Rabbi Elazar, ze or, this is a reference to light, she yakor ba'olam hazeh, that is strong or heavy or important in this world. For kafui la'olam habo, kafui literally means that is something that floats, something that's lightweight, or better, something that's not important in olam habo. In other words, that which we perceive to be a strong light nowadays, well, in the world to come, that very same light will appear to be of a very insignificant nature. As we said, these are esoteric topics, and we, in the context of Gemara markings, will have to leave it at that. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Elu Negoim Ve'Oilos. The reference of, in this pasuk, to Or Yekorois is a reference to the area of study known as Negoim, and also study of different skin discolorations that are called Negoim, and Oilos is the topic of structures and as they figure in overshadowing, etc. It's a very elaborate area of study. And Shiyakor and Hebel Mazeh, they are considered heavy or difficult in this world nowadays. Ukfuyin Hain Lo Mabo, but in the world to come or in the future, they will appear to be light. That could be a result of much greater knowledge and understanding that will be imparted to humanity in that future time. So that things that appear to be difficult now will in fact not appear that way later. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Omar Elu b'nei Odom, Shiyakorin hein bo'olam hazeh, Ukfuyin hein lo'olam haba. This is a reference to Yikoros. Again, Yikoros is something that's important, and Kfuin is something that is light and insignificant. So he says that this pasuk is referring to people that in this world are considered important and wealthy. And Rashi adds, we're describing people that are Einon Toivin Lamokim, people that are not positive in their relationship to the Almighty. So we're dealing with negative type people in a religious sense, but they are nevertheless perceived because of their wealth and power to be important. So that is their status in Olam Hazeh, in this world. The Kfuyin Hein Lom Haba, but in the world to come, those very same people will appear to be of very little significance. And to illustrate this, we have a story, and you can see we have a long marking. We call this a Maisa, a long incident. And on the side of the Gemara, we have the Maisa, we have a topic heading, where we call this a Maisa. Benosh Rabbi Shimon Levi, the son of Rabbi Shimon Levi, appropriately enough, because he is the one that, Rabbi Shimon Levi is the one that just gave the third explanation of Yikoros V'Kipoin. So his son, Roya Es Ha'olam Ha'emes, he had what might be termed today a near-death experience, where he was clinically dead, and then V'Chozer, and he comes back, U'medaveach L'Aviv, and then reports to his father what he saw. So now the story. Kiha the Rav Yosef, braid Rav Yishu ben Levi, Rav Yosef the son of Rav Yishu ben Levi, cholash ve'isnagid. He became very weak and ill, and Rashi says, isnagid gova. Gova is an expression that you find in the Chumash, vayigva, vayomois. It's an expression of death. Uporcha rucho, and his spirit fluttered away. So what we would call a near-death experience. So that took place with Rav Shua ben Levi. Ki Hodar, when he came back, when he was revived, Sh'omar le Avuha Mai Choses. So his father asked him, Rav Shua ben Levi asked his son, what did you see? Omar le, so he says, Oilam Hopuch Ro'isi. I saw an inverted world. And we have a house marking that is here to highlight what we have on the side of our Gemara, under the Mivneh. We've indicated this is Prote HaDivuch, the details of his report. So you'll see there are three details that he shares with us. He says, I saw an inverted world. Olam Hapuch Ra'isi. Elyonim Lamato V'tachtonim Lamala. Those that are considered on high in this world were there in the world, in the other world, down below. And those who in this world are perceived as lowly were high up in that world. Omar lo, Rabbi Shimon Levi said, Bini oilam boro ro'isa. You saw a world of clarity. In other words, what's really important is not what you see in this world. This world is termed in other Sforim, is termed an Alma de Shikra, the world of lies, where in fact that which is really not that which is truly not significant is perceived as significant, and that which is truly significant and pious and humble and all the many positive attributes that you read about are nevertheless perceived in this world as lowly. So what his son saw was in fact a world of clarity, not an inverted world. And he continues, V'anan hechi hosam, and we, how are we, the Talmidei Chachomim, perceived over there? So the son answers, Ki hechi de'isu anan hocha, hochi isinon hosam, as we are here. And I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that as the Gemara, in the time of the Gemara, Talmidei Chachomim were perceived and held in high regard. So that he was saying, just like we are held in high regard in this world, so too we, the Talmidei Chachamim, the Torah scholars, the Torah sages, are held in high esteem there as well. Vishamati, and I also heard Shu Omrim, that they say in that world, Ashrei mi sheba lekan, the Talmudo biyodo, fortunate is the one that comes here, meaning to that world, the future world, that spiritual world, that he who arrives here is fortunate, the Talmud Biyado, who has his Torah scholarship in his hands. In other words, fortunate is one who comes to the world to come with Torah knowledge. Vishalmati also heard, Shoyu Omrim Haruge Malchus Ein Odom Yochol Lamoid B'Mechitzasan. There's an expression here, Haruge Malchus. It's a reference to people who were executed by the government. And in the time of the Gemara, it could very well be a reference to those who were executed by the Roman authorities. So it's, no one can stand in their quadrant. In other words, they are placed there in the world to come on a pedestal, and no one else can join them. So the Gemara asks, Man Ninu, who are being referred to? Rabbi Akiva v'chaverov. If it's a reference to Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues, they very likely a reference to what we know that we call the Asor Haruge Malchus, the 10 martyrs. Many of you may be familiar with the story concerning their execution from the Yom Kippur service, the Musaf of Yom Kippur, or likewise there's a parallel passage in the Kinos of Tisha B'Av. So is that the group that he was referring to, that the great Torah sages, Rabbi Kiva and his colleagues, that were executed and died al Kiddush Hashem? So the Gemara says that's not likely what was referred to in the story with Rav Yosef here. And the Gemara explains, Mishum Haruge Malchus Vesulo. If it were referring to Rabbi Kiva v'Chaverov, that no one can stand in their precinct, is it only because they were executed? Is it not because they happen to be phenomenal Torah scholars, putting them head and shoulders above everyone else? And for that reason, we would have said, Ein Odom Yochol Lamod B'Mechitzasan, not because they were executed. In other words, they have other merits other than their having been executed by the authorities and dying in sanctification of God's name. Ela Haruge Lud. Rather, it's a reference to the Haruge Lud. Now you might ask, well, who was that? So Rashi explains. The Haruge Lud are Shnei Achim Hoyu. They were two brothers, Shemosu Atzmon Al Yisrael. They sacrificed themselves for the benefit, for the salvation of the Jewish people. Shahodu Al Atzmon, they confessed. Concerning themselves, or they volunteered a confession on something that they did not do, that they were responsible for the murder. Shehodu al atzman harigas beis hamelach shematilin oisa al kol Yisrael. The authorities had libelously condemned the Jewish people and holding them responsible for the death of the king's daughter. And that would have been catastrophic for the entire Jewish people. So these two brothers stepped forward claiming that they committed the murder, thereby sparing or saving the rest of the Jewish people from a catastrophe. So this is what the Rav Yosef, the son of Shmuel Levi, was referring to regarding that which he heard, that those two brothers have a special place in the world to come that others cannot reach, so to speak. The Gemara continues, and we continue with a drosh on a pasuk in Zechariah. Here it's pasuk Chof of Perek Yudalid, Bayomahu Ye al Metzilois Hasus Kodesh Lashem. And it'll be on that day that on the Metzilos Hasus is a horse. Metzilos, Rashi indicates, is some type of something ornamental that's attached to horses. So it'll be on that day that the Metzilos Hasus will be Kodesh Lashem, will be sanctified to Hashem. My Metzilos Hasus, what does that refer to? So again, you see the triangles and the same names as we saw above. Amri B'Shua ben Levi, Osid HaKodesh Baruch Hu LaHoysif Al Yerushalayim. The Pasuk is prophesying in the future the boundaries, the dimensions of Yerushalayim will be so great, will be increased. Ad Shasus Rots U Matzil. The word Matzil comes from the Loshon, comes from the expression Tzel, meaning shade underneath him. which in much simpler terms means that Jerusalem's distance or boundaries will be so great that a horse would ride a half a day until from sunrise till noon, a half a day of a horse running, and only then would the horse reach the boundary of Yerushalayim. So you can imagine a horse, which is a rather swift creature, running for a half a day. That shows the extent that Yerushalayim will reach. And the idea of half day is seen in the word tsel, where generally speaking, when the sun shines and it's not directly overhead, so the shadow is cast to one side of the individual or the other. When is it that the sun is, when the individual himself finds the shade underneath him, and in this case underneath the horse, that's only when the sun is overhead, hence a reference to noontime. So that gives you, as we said, a feeling of how extensive Yerushalayim will be. On a parenthetical note, again, these are esoteric topics, but if one attaches it or associates this with something of a realistic nature or a contemporary nature, even today, as we are making this recording, even today, if you were to take a look at Yerushalayim of old, which roughly matches that which you find in the old city of Jerusalem, which is a known, which those of you have visited or have seen it, it's a walled city. And when you look at a map of modern Jerusalem, you'll notice that the old city of Jerusalem is a very small fraction of today's municipal boundaries. I'm not sure that today's municipal boundaries are as great as that which Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is describing, but nevertheless, the sense of expansion of Yerushalayim can be felt even today. So, if that has any validity as far as the Gemara is concerned, I don't know, but it's something to think about. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Elazar Omar, Kol Mitzilos Shetoylin Lesus Bein Einov Ye Kodosh Lashem. And this is a reference to the ornamental attachments that people hang or suspend from horses will be sanctified. Now, what's the connection between sanctification of sus of horse ornaments? So Rashi says here, Yeh Kodesh Hashem Sheyisnadvu Yisrael Lidvoseim LaMikdash. People will be making dedications. In other words, their horse ornaments, they will dedicate them to the Beis HaMikdash. There will be more on this topic as the Gemara continues over the next few lines. For Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Kol Biza Sheboizuzin Yisrael, Ad Shah Shasus Rotsu Matzio Yeh Kodesh Lashem. There is a... in the future, there's going to be a great war, if you will, where the Jewish people will plunder all of the Gentile forces that are attacking them, and there will be great spoils and booty taken by the Jewish people. So Rashi says, "Kol biza shiavozi Yisrael min hanochrim b'yom echad ad chatzos." All of the spoils that the Jews will capture on that. From morning till noon on one day, so whatever they are able to gather from morning till noon, they will dedicate them to the Beis Hamikdash. They will bring all of those spoils to the Beis Hamikdash. And again, you see that the term matzil is the idea of shade cast underneath it, as we described before, and that explains that all of the spoils that they gather till noon, they will dedicate. Now the Gemara evaluates these three opinions, and we've used a squiggle underline highlighting the expression Bishlamo Lamando Omar, and the Gemara will be pointing out the different opinions and how the which pshat, which explanation seems most likely. Bishlamo lamando Omar kol biza shebozuzu Yisrael, and it went on to say there Yeh Kodesh Lashem. That explanation, that was the third explanation. Hainu dichtiv, in the same context, it says Vohoya Hasiros Beves Hashem Kemizrokim Lifnei Hamizbeach. We glance at Rashi Hasiros Kemizrokim Af Hasiros, even pans and bowls, you shall kesef shel zahav, they will be made of made of silver and gold. Shtei shom biza rabo lehekdesh, indicating a great amount of spoil that will be dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash. So, as we said, pshat number three that explains the pasuk in terms of a great amount of booty being dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash, explaining pasuk. Pasuk Chof, Ravoya Hasiros, Vesim Mizrok, Lefnei Hashem, makes sense. So, just like the ornaments of horses would be dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, so too other spoils would be dedicated. And as we said, the Pasuk Chof, can reads smoothly with that explanation. That was the explanation given by Rabbi Yochanan. Elo lemando Omar Bahanoch Tarti, explanations number 1 and 2. How does this pasuk of Vehoya Hasiros Beveis Hashem fit in? My Vehoya Hasiros Beveis Hashem. Just to repeat what we've said. Explanation number 3 that described the great booty captured up till noon time would be dedicated. So, and that was Metzilos Hasus, was a reference to noon time, and a reference to the booty gathered up till that time would be sanctified. So then the pasuk of Vehoya Hasiros Beveis Hashem Kemizrokim Lifnei Hamizbeach also is a reflection of a great amount of booty being dedicated. But according to Pshatim numbers 1 and 2, what is Vehoya Hasiros Beveis Hashem? Rashi says, my Vehoya Hasiros Kemizrokim Ha b'metzilas hasus leko hegdish kulei hai. The horse ornaments don't represent that much by way of booty. So true, they may have been dedicating, as pshat number 2 said, they would have dedicated their horse ornaments to the Beis Hamikdash. How does that jive with the pasuk of indicating a massive amount of booty as was reflected in Vehoya Hasiros Beveis Hashem Kemizrokim Lifnei Mizbeach? So the Gemara answers, Milso Achriti Ka'omar. The Pasuk Vehoya Hasiros is referring to something else. The Misaser Yisrael, it's a prophecy that the Jews will become very wealthy. Umisnadvi Umaisi, and as a result of their great wealth, they will make large dedications to the Beis Hamikdash. Continuing, Bishlamo Lamandomar Biza. Once again, pshat number 3 appears to be the best pshat. Hainu Dichtiv Velo Yia Kinani Oy Beveis Hashem Tzvokis. The word Kinani means a treasurer, someone who is a merchant or a treasurer. In this case, a treasurer. There will be no more need for a treasurer in the Beis HaMikdash. The role of the treasurer was to make sure funds were allocated in a proper way. In the event that there is a vast amount of wealth, so there won't be the need for someone to be in charge of what would be otherwise limited funds. So that pasuk, which is pasuk Chof Aleph, just it follows the pasuk that we opened this section with, makes sense that we are describing the pasuk with the Metzilos Hasus. Kodesh Hashem is describing the great amount of booty taken. Hence, there be no more need for and I should add, the great amount of booty that's taken and subsequently dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash will then be and explains why they won't need a treasurer anymore in the Beis Hamikdash. Elo l'man domar hanoch tarti, but according to Pshatim 1 and 2, my velo yeknani, what's the connection between that that lo yeknani in Pasuk Chaf Aleph and that which they explained in their respective pshatim regarding the great the expansion of Jerusalem or their dedicating horse ornaments? Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah explains that the lo yeknani means ein kan oni. There will be no more poverty. And that fits in to the explanation that the Gemara gave in defense of Pshatim number 1 and 2 when it said Milsach Riti Komar, a reflection of great wealth. So Ein, so Lo Yeknani, there will be no more Onin. That's a what's called an abbreviated expression, Knani and Ein Kan Oni. The Gemara continues, looking into the word Kenani, which was used previously in Pshat number 3 as a reference to a treasurer or someone who deals with financial matters. So the Gemara asks here, Ukenani Menolon de Ikri Tagor, from where do you see that the word Kenani is associated with a merchant? Generally speaking, when you see the word Kenani, it's a reference to one of the seven nations that occupied the land of Israel before the entrance of the Jewish people after the exodus from Mitzrayim. The Kenani is one of the seven nations. However, it has another meaning. And Kenani means, as the Gemara explains, a merchant. But where do you see that in Psukim? The Gemara answers, and you'll notice we have a long answer marking. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayar Shom Yehuda Bas Ish Kenani. Yehuda, after his wife died, he saw a woman. Correction: this is not a reference to his wife having died, but rather this is Yehuda finding a wife for himself. His initial finding a wife, and the pasuk describes the wife taken by Yehuda as the daughter of an Ish Kenani. So, my Kenani, what does Kenani mean? Ilemo Kenani Mamish, if you were to think that it means a person from the Canaanite people, that can't be. He comes from a family whose predecessors abhorred those nations and wouldn't have taken wives from the Canaanite people. Efshir bo Avraham, the Hizrus Yitzchok, could it be that Avraham, his great-grandfather, had warned his son Yitzchok not to take a woman, a wife from them? Bo Yitzchok, Hizrus Yankiv, and Yitzchok, his grandfather, warned his father, Yankiv Ovinu, not to take a girl, a woman, a wife from the Canaanite people, Yehuda, Ozev, and Osiv, and Yehuda would go and take from them. So Kenani can't mean that. Elo Omar Reb Shimon ben Lokish, Bas Gavro Tagro, the daughter of a merchant man. Dichtiv Kenaan Biodo Mozne Mirmo. Kenan is someone who had in his hands scales of trickery. But a merchant is one who holds scales to measure out the goods being sold. So you see Kenan in the context of a form of commerce. V'boy same omehocha from this pasuk. This is an alternative explanation of where you see Kenan associated with commerce. Asher Sochareh Sorin Kina'aneho Nichbode Oretz. So in this pasuk you see Socharim, which are merchants, in juxtaposition with Kina'ani. We continue. We're continuing to darshan psukim from Zechariah Perek Yud Dalet. Here we're going to be darshaning pasuk Tes. The pasuk is a rather well known pasuk. It says Vahoyo Hashem Lemelech Al Kol Oretz. By Yomahu Ye Hashem Echad, the pasuk goes on to say Ushmoy Echad. Now we put Ushmoy Echad in brackets because the Gemara will darshan that expression separately. So the pasuk says, and it will be in that day, the future time, that the Almighty will be the king over the entire world, and he will be one. The Gemara asks, and what we've done with our markings is we've used a double underline to highlight the expression Otu Idna, which is in a sense a question on that which this pasuk is saying, and we've indicated this under our Mivneh heading on the side. She'elos, the Otu Idna expression are She'elos al Hodichti Voya Bayomahu Otu Ha'idna Ein Shmo Echad. The pasuk says, and it will be in that day that Hashem will be one and his name will be one. So what does that mean that it will be in those days? Otu ha'idno lav echodhu, and today he is not one and solitary and individual. The Almighty is, as we say, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. He is alone. He is individual. Why refer to that as something that will be in the future when it is so today just as well? Omar Rabbi Acho Bar Chanino. So Rabbi Acho explains, Lo ke'olam hazeh ha'olam haba. The pasuk when it says Hashem Echad, it is a reference to the time in the future, which is not like nowadays. Ha'olam hazeh, nowadays, al besuros toivos, when one hears good tidings, Omer Baruch HaTov HaMeitav, he recites a bracha indicating his praise of Hashem for as one who bestows the good and benefits. The albus rose, and on negative tidings, Omer Baruch Dayon HaEmes, a person acknowledges any cause of despair, all of those kinds of things. People will recite a brocha, Baruch Dayan HaEmes, acknowledging the Almighty as the judge who judges truthfully. However, Le'olam Haba Kuloi HaToiv V'Ameitiv, in the world to come, Rashi says very simply, Ein Shom Besura Ra, there will be no negative tidings. And that's what Hashem, Hashem Echad, means there will be only one form of tidings that will be received. That's the idea of oneness. We continue in the Gemara. Ushmoi Echad, my Echad. What does that mean that his name is one? Otu idno lav shmo Echad hu. And today his name is not one. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, Loikolam Azeh Ho'olam Habo. The world of today is not like the world to come. Ho'olam Azeh Nichtav Beyud and a Hey. These are two letters that represent the name of Hashem. In fact, this also represents the beginning of the four letter name of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's a Yud and a Hey, and there's a Vav and a Hey, and that's how the Shem Hashem, that's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is written. As you open a Sefer Torah, you will see that's how his name is spelled. However, we don't read the name, we don't pronounce the name using those letters. The Nikra Ba'alef Dalet. There's a term that we use, we call this the Adnus expression. When a person makes a bracha, he says Baruch Atah, and then he says the name of Hashem using the Adnus word. And that is what is Gemara refers to. He's pronounced with the Aleph Dalet, just the beginning Aleph Dalet, Nun Yud for the whole pronunciation. So that the spelling, the Yud and the Hey and the Vav, which is followed by a Hey, doesn't, is the way it's written, but it doesn't correspond to the way there's no connection between the appearance of those letters and the way we pronounce it. That is what happens in this world. In the world to come, Nikra beyud and a hey, the Nichtav beyud and a hey. This is a bit esoteric, but that's all we can really say on this topic in the context of our Daf Yomi Shir. And once again, the approach we have to the Almighty's name in this world will change in the world to come. And that's what is meant to Ushmoy Echad. There will be only one. There won't be a difference between the way it's written and the way it's pronounced. Sovar Rava Lemidrushe Bepirka. It occurred to Rava that he should teach this, and this could very well be a reference to the actual pronunciation that was known in the Beis HaMikdash. There was the knowledge of how to pronounce that name that we don't say based on the letters, the Yud and the He name. Rava thought to maybe recite it in a public lecture. Amalei Hahu Saba, there was a sage, an elderly man that said, Alem Ksiv, the Pasuk says, Zeshmi Le'olam, and the word Le'olam is spelled missing a vav. It's spelled Le'elem, which is a loshon, an expression of Ha'alom, of hiding something. So the Hahu Saba was said, Le'elem Ksiv, Le'elem Ksiv meaning in the Pasuk that describes the name of Hashem, he says, this is my name, Le'olam, but spelled without a vav means it shall be hidden. Do not publicize how to pronounce that four-letter name of Hashem. So Rava had an intention to publicize how it's actually pronounced, but he was convinced otherwise. Rashi says, Le'midrashe Bepirka, Kriya the Yud and the Hey the Arba Isios Darshei the Tameho Hatluyim Bo. He was going to read it or pronounce it and also offer explanations behind the significance or the meaning of that name. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Avino Rami. Rav Avino raises a contradiction in Psukim. Ksiv Ze Shmi Le'olam. V'zeh zichri l'dor v'dor. Now, the word le'olam is something that is hidden. The word zichri is an expression meaning say it, read it, or pronounce it without anything hidden about it. So the elam, that's the way the word is written. We pronounce it le'olam, but it's written le'elam. And in the same pasuk, it says, Zichri, which this is the way you shall pronounce me generation after generation. So how do you resolve that? How do you explain, on the one hand, something is hidden, on the other hand, something is pronounced? So, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Kishani Nichtov Ani Nikra, not like the way the name is written out, am I to be called? Nichtov Ani B'Yud and a Hey, V'Nikra Ani B'Aleph Dalet. The writing is the four letters, as we explained earlier, the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey. And the reading, the way it's pronounced, is with the Aleph Dalet pronunciation, the Agnus word. Well, as you can see, that completes the third perek of Psachim, and we now continue with the fourth perek, Perek Mokom Shenohagu. Before we continue with the mission itself, on the side we have a Nosei Mivne heading, a topic heading and structural note where we feature a diamond, and we've written Hitchashvut, the necessity to take into consideration Hitchashvut b'mokom shiyotza misham uv'mokom shigia l'sham. Take into consideration a person's point of departure and of the point of arrival, Be'inyin, Asiyas Melach HaBerev Pesach, and Peros Shvius. There are practices that a person has based on where he is coming from, and his destination might be a place where they don't share those same practices. So how is a person supposed to conduct himself? That will be the topic at hand. Similarly, in the Mishnah, later in the Mishnah, we will see reference to Peirush Shvi'is, which those are the fruits of the seventh year of the sabbatical cycle, the Shemitah year. Those fruits are hefker, they're unowned, and anyone can benefit from them. However, the length of time that one is allowed to benefit from seventh year fruits is the amount of time that they are available in the fields to the animals in the wilds. And all of this law is based on psukim, of course. And when fruits go out of season, in other words, they're not available anymore on the trees in the fields, then you, if you still have fruits like that, must get rid of them. That's called bior, the bior of Shemitah, of Shvi'is. The Mishnah will refer to a case where you come from a location where the fruits are either in season or out of season, and you travel to a place where the situation is different. So how do you conduct yourself with regard to the fruits that you have in your possession? The Mishnah. Mokom shenagul asus melocha be'arvei psochim ad chatzos oisim. In places that their minog, that their practice is to do melochas on the 14th of Nisan till noon, so do so. Mokom shenagu shelo lasos einosin. In places that their practice was to refrain from melochas, from constructive activities on erev Pesach, so you are to desist. What is the reason for avoiding melochos on erev Pesach? And it's noteworthy that the Mishnah mentions we're talking about a time frame of until Chatzos, meaning the whole morning of erev Pesach, they wouldn't do melacha, and that was based on minhag. The Gemara will point out that from Chatzos onwards, though, it appears that would be osur, would actually osur and may ikur hadin, as opposed to just a minhag, just a practice. But from noon onwards, the prohibition, the status of the prohibition, seems to be more severe. So the question once again is that why would there be a practice of refraining from melacha already during the morning hours of the 14th of Nisan? So Rashi explains, shelo la'asos kidei shelo ye torud b'melacha. We don't want people to become preoccupied with melacha, v'yishkach biur chimson, or forget to do the chometz destruction, which takes place during those morning hours. And he'll forget v'yishkach biur chimso u'shchitas ha'pesach, and to tend to slaughtering the korban pesach v'tikun matzah, and preparing his matzahs l'tzorach halayla, the mitzvah l'tzorach mibel yom. The proper way is to take care of all of these things while it's still day, while it's still the 14th, k'day l'hosev meir, so that when the night comes, he's ready, everything is ready, and he immediately sits down to what we would call the Seder night. In other words, not to delay the beginning of the Pesach Seder. Kida Omer Perek Basra, as the Gemara says in this Masech, in the 10th Perek, Choyfin Matzah B'Leilei Psochim B'Shvil Tinokos Shelo Yishnu. The point here, and we've dashed on B'Shvil Tinokos Shelo Yishnu, we don't want people delaying the beginning of the Seder, because we don't want the young folk, the children, to fall asleep. The central theme of the Seder is educating the young ones, the children, in what happened during the Exodus from Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt. And in order to make sure the children don't fall asleep, so we want everything gets started on time as soon as nightfall sets in. And that can be accomplished only if everything is prepared while it's still day. So in order to ensure that people would be preoccupied with their preparations before the night. So they are, the minig might very well be that people refrain from other malacha activities. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Ha-hoylech mi-mokum she-oysin le-mokum she-in-oysin. Person who travels from a place where the practice was to do malacha in the morning hours, and he goes to a place where they don't. Oy mimakom she'enosin, or he comes from a place where they refrained, lemakom she'osin, and he's going to a place where they do malachas on the morning of the 14th. How does the halacha recognize or deal with a person who's going from one location to another where there's a change in practices? So the Mishnah says, "Noisin malav chomrei mokom sheyotzam misham v'chomrei mokom shehalach l'sham." We impose upon him the stringencies of both places, of the place he departed from and the place that he arrives. V'al yishane adam mipnei ha-machlokas, and a person should not change. He shouldn't do differently, because that will arouse controversy. Let's glance at Rashi, because Rashi introduces a question the Gemara will raise later on. Rashi at the top, and we're at the top of Omid Beis, Rashi says, "Va'al yishane adam ba'gemara parach." The Gemara will ask, "Mimokoim she'ein oisin, lemokoim she'oisin." Person comes from a place where they don't do malacha, and his destination is a place that they do malacha. V'ihu nami al yishaneh. Well, if you accept this law of the Mishnah, don't behave differently from where you are, so he will then not be different. V'le avayit, and he'll do malachas. But how can you say that? For Amris, but did we not just say in the phrase just before, Noisnim alav chomrei mokom sheyotza misham? We impose upon him the stringencies of the place from which he originated. And in that place, they do not do malachas. So how can you resolve the imposition of that stringency and this point that one should not behave differently from those around him? A question that will have to be dealt with later. Kayotsebo, similarly, Hamoylich Perishvias, a person is carrying with him fruits of the seventh year, Mimokum Shekolu, Lamokum Shelokolu, from a region where kolu means they finished off, they are no longer available in the wilds, they're no longer available to the animals in the fields. And he's carrying those fruits to a place, Lamokum Shelokolu, where the fruits are still in season. Geographically, this could very well be that in one part of Israel, the season is over for that particular fruit, and in a different part of the land, they are still in season. Oy mimokom shelokolu lamokom shekolu, or he is coming from a place where they are still available, and he ends up in a place where they are available. Chayov leva'er, he has to get rid of them. So that even though he might find himself in a place where they are still available, but because of the chumrah of the place from which he originated, where they are already kalu, we impose upon him the obligation of bi'ur. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, tse v'hoveloch af ato. Rashi says this will be explained in the Meforish b'Gemara, so we won't add to that other than Rabbi Yehuda says, we tell him, you can bring as well. But that doesn't explain this phrase. The Gemara. Before we begin the Gemara itself, let's glance at the side. We have a Noseya topic heading. Zmanim Shiesh Limona Measias Malacha. The Gemara will be discussing different times where we are expected to restrain or desist from malacha, from constructive activities. Hagemara dona lama kotoni davka arve psochim. The Gemara will ask, why is Erev Pesach featured? Why specifically Erev Pesach? Kishigam ba'arve shabosos u'shar yomim toivim yesh limona. When the same is true regarding Fridays throughout the year and other Yom Tov Eves, Erev Yom Tovs. Rashi explains a little bit more. The Gemara's opening question is, "My Irya Arve Psochem?" Why is the Mishnah speaking about Erev Pesach specifically? Afilu Arve Shabbos Arve Yomim Tovim Nami. Let's, before we go further in the Gemara, let's glance at Rashi to appreciate a bit of a nuance. Rashi says, "My Irya Arve Psochem Dekotoni." The Mishnah said, "Ad Chatzos Beminhoga." The morning restraint from Malacha is dependent on custom. Michlal, that leads you to infer that the Mechatzos Lahalon Oser, that beyond noon, it's forbidden by letter of the law, not just by virtue of custom. V'loma lei lemisni chatzos, lashminin hachdiyuka. Why did the Mishnah feature chatzos, that until chatzos, there were places whose custom was not to do malacha, in order to enable us to see this inference that after chatzos it's not minog anymore. After chatzos it's already letter of the law. Well, that being the case, why feature Erev Pesach? Hokol arve yomim toivim asiri. So too with regard to the beginning, the introduction to any holiday, the Erev Yom Tov, the Yom Tov Eve, is also prohibited in Malachas prior to the actual onset of the holiday. So let's try to simplify the issue over here. The Mishnah on the one hand makes reference to a minug of not doing Malacha in the morning. But during the afternoon, though, the Mishnah is also telling us in the afternoon, so Erev Pesach is a time that it's usur by letter of the law in doing melacha, as opposed to mere custom. That being the case, why is it necessary to feature Erev Pesach? That applies to Erev Shabbos and Erev Yomim Tovim as well. Disanya, we have a Tanaic source that we continue reading in the Gemara. Ha'oisa melacha ba'arvei Shabbosus v'yomim tovim min amincho l'malo eino roa simin brocha li'olam. One who does melachas on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov, from Mincho Lamala, that's from 9.5 hours of the day, from, let's say, on a 12-hour day framework, that would be from 3:30 in the afternoon onwards, he will not see a blessing in his activities. So what's the point? The point is, you see, Erev Yom Tov, Erev Shabbos Melocha restrictions across the board. It's not limited to Erev Pesach. So why does the Mishnah feature Arve Psochim in its teaching that in the morning, so some places did, some places did not do Malacha. But that was in the morning. From noon on, it was strictly forbidden to do Malacha. That being the case, so why feature Erev Pesach when that concept of Erev Yom Tov and Erev Shabbos Malacha restriction is applicable to other days as well, other than Erev Pesach? The Gemara answers, there's a difference between Erev Pesach and the other days referred to. Hasam min amincho lemalo huda osur, samuch lemincholo. As the source itself said, Erev Shabbos and the Arve Yomim Toivim, the restriction is from Min HaMincho Lamala. That's from 9.5 hours of the day, or as we said, 3:30 in the afternoon onwards. But prior to that, there is no restriction. Samuch LaMincho means prior to that, there is no restriction. Hocha, however, here with regard to Erev Pesach, Mechatzos, the restriction of Malacha sets in from noon onwards, placing it in a totally different category. That's why the Mishnah spoke specifically about Erev Pesach. Inami, another difference is, Hasam simin brocha hu delo chazi, aval shamuti lo mishamtino leif. With regard to the weekly Erev Shabbos or other Erev Yom Tovs, all that we say is that if you do malacha later in the day, so you won't see blessing from it if you are conducting, if you're producing things and intend to market them and make money, so you won't see profit from those things. However, if a person does malacha during those hours, we won't excommunicate him. Shamuti has to do with excommunicating him. He won't be subject to a cherem. Cherem is excommunication. But when it comes to Erev Pesach, if a person does malachas during the forbidden hours or the restricted hours, the Shamuti Nami Mishamtin Lay, we will go further and actually subject him to excommunication. So we have two approaches as to explaining what the difference or why the Mishnah featured Erev Pesach as opposed to the standard Erev Shabbos, Erev Yom Tovim situation. Gufa. Now the Gemara quotes that which we mentioned in passing in full and will elaborate. Ha'oise Malacha Ba'arve Shabbosis Uvarve Yom Tovim Min HaMincha L'mala. Person who does malachas during those times, uvamotzoi Shabbos, uvamotzoi Yom Tovim, uvamotzoi Yom Kippurim, or he does malachas after Shabbos finishes, the departure of Shabbos, or departure of Yom Tov, or the departure of Yom HaKippurim. These are times that even though, technically speaking, it's no longer the holiday, the holy day has passed because three stars appeared, nevertheless, there is an expectation that a person allows the holiness to spill over into the mundane hours. This is referred to as where Moisif mechol al hakodesh. We draw from the hours of chol, from the weekday hours, and add those hours onto the holy hours. And as we extend holiness, uvechol makom sheyesh sham nidnud avera. And likewise, with regard to any other occasion where there's be something of a, with nidnud means a remez, a hint to a sin, meaning it smacks of a sin. Lasuye, the Gra's girsa here, the Gra features a change in text that he says lasuye tisha ba'av. So if a person does malachas in any of these on any of these occasions that we just enumerated, including tisha b'av, eino roe simen bracha liolam, he will not see any profit from those activities forever. Now we've introduced a diamond marking. You can see on the side under our Nosei Mivneh heading, Dvorim She'eno Roe Bohem Simen Bracha. The diamond highlights that, and we will pick this up later, and you can see another one of these diamonds at the first line under the Tosfos where the lines start getting wider, and quite a few more examples of this as the Gemara continues. The Gemara. We open this section with, there's a long point, notice the long point marking, and also a topic heading on the side, Le'itim Zrizus L'gnai Vatzlonus L'shvach. There are times where diligence, Zrizus is an expression of someone who is not lazy. He's a productive, active individual. We'll in English we can say a diligent individual, or someone who exhibits diligence in his behavior, which is generally speaking a very positive quality, but at times that will actually be negative, and to the contrary, laziness will be viewed in a positive light. That will be explained in the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan, the Tanaic source, features four categories. Yesh Zoraz V'Niskar, there is a situation of someone who is diligent and profits from that. V'Yesh Zoraz V'Nifsar, there are those that in their diligency actually lose out. V'Yesh Zoraz V'Nifsar, Yesh Shofel V'Niskar. Shofel literally means lowly, but in our context it would mean laziness. So at sometimes laziness will be beneficial, and sometimes it causes loss. And each one of these are now explained with our markings. You can see we've underlined and numbered the terms as they appear, corresponding to that which we saw in the source. Zoraz v'niskar, what is that? the Ovid Kuli Shabbata, Velo Ovid Memale Shabbat. This is someone who does malocha. He might be a craftsman, an artisan, a merchant. He's very diligent. Kuli Shabbata means the whole week. Shabbata means week, but not on Mali Shabbata, but not on Erev Shabbos. So that's, as we saw in the source before, that people who do malochas during Erev Shabbos, they won't see profit from their activities. Therefore, someone who minimizes his activities on Erev Shabbos, and we saw before that would mean from most likely from 3:30 in the afternoon of Erev Shabbos onwards, if he does not exhibit his zrizus during those hours, but during the rest of the week he is diligent, so he will see profit from his efforts. Zorez v'nifsad, someone who is zorez but will lose out, the Ovid Kuli Shabbat, the Ovid Mali Shabbat, we might call him the workaholic type, where he works diligently all week, including all of Friday as well. Shofel v'niskar, the lo Ovid Kuli Shabbat, the lo Ovid b'mali Shabbat. He doesn't do work at all, the whole week, including Friday. Basically, a totally lazy individual. And yet, what's interesting here is he's called niskar. He's called profiting or praiseworthy. Rashi explains, Shofa v'niskar, delo ovid kuli shabbata, velo b'mali shabbata, v'yafagav delav l'shu mitzvah michvin, even though he doesn't have any mitzvah intentions, he is simply a lazy person. Restraint from malacha on Erev Shabbos is just a continuation of his non-activity throughout the week. So he doesn't have any specific mitzvah intentions. Nevertheless, mitzvah shelo lishmo miyohavya, it's called mitzvah without intention, that is accomplished. Damrinu lekamon, the Gemara later on will say, yasuk adam b'mitzvah afilu shelo lishmo. This is an approach that one can adopt to perform mitzvahs, even though it's lacking the heart, so to speak, lacking the feeling, lacking the intention, but through getting accustomed to mitzvah performance, even if initially it's with lack of attention, it nevertheless can lead to a higher level of existence and performance and living. Therefore, it's considered niskar. However, shofel v'nifsad, the lo ovid kuli shabbata, v'ovid b'mali shabbata. He doesn't move out of his chair all week, but all of a sudden on Friday, he becomes energized. That is shofel v'nifsad. Omar Rava, hani noshi de mechuzah, the women folk of mechuzah, afagav de lo avdon avidita b'mali shabbata, mishum mefankusahu. Even though these women folk of Mechuzah, Rava was the rabbi of that city, and he points out that the women folk of Mechuzah didn't do any malacha on Erev Shabbos, and that's because of their laziness. D'ha kol yoima nami lo ko'avdon, all week they didn't do malacha either. Afilu hachi shofel v'niskar karina lehu. We will refer to them as lazy, but profiting, but considered praiseworthy. Rava Rami. Rava raises a seeming contradiction in Psukim. Ksiv ki godoil ad shamayim chazdecha. Your kindness, the kindness of the Almighty is great until the heavens. Uksiv ki gadol me'al shamayim chasdech. In another pasuk, it says that your chesed is even above heavens. Ha ketzad. Kan ba'oisim lishma. Kan ba'oisim shelo lishma. Those who are oisim lishma, who perform mitzvahs with the intent to fulfill the will of the Almighty, so the reward that the kindness that they deserve is even beyond Shamayim, even beyond the heavens. However, those who behave shelo lishma, So we say ad l'shamayim, chesed that's bestowed upon them reaches heavens but doesn't go beyond. And that's what we explained before, that a mitzvah shelo lishma also has value. And as we are in the middle of a long explanation, we continue the long marking you can see on the side. And this analysis of oisin shelo lishma is in line with Rav Yehuda's teaching. The Amr of Yehuda Marav, the Olam Yasek Ora B'Torva Mitzvah, a person should be involved at all times with Torah learning and mitzvah performance, af al pi shelo lishma, even if it is lacking pure intent of purity, but rather he is doing so with some type of what we'll call self-interest in mind. And the reason for this is af al pi shemitoch shelo lishma ba lishma, through mitzvah performance, even on this lower level of intent, level of kavona, he will come to a higher level as time goes on. There is quite a bit more on the topic that's worth looking into. We are not going to get into it right now, but there is a Tosfos that we highly recommend looking at. The second Tosfos, Dibur Masel V'Kan Ba'Oisin Shelo Lishma, worth looking into that. We continue in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, and as we mentioned earlier, we're going to see a number of sources where the theme of Eino Roa Simin Brocha Li Oilam appears. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamitzapeh L'Schar Ishto V'Reichayim Eino Roya Simin Brocha L'Olam. One who literally looks forward to or depends upon his wife's income. And Rechayim has to do with a grinder. The Gemara will be much clearer as we go on in the Gemara. So those will not produce for him profit. Schar Ishto, what is referred to by that, by the income of his wife? Mas Kulsa. Rashi says on Maskulsa, Noteles Moznayim Bioda, where one's wife carries a balance scales, Umaleches Bashuk Laskiron L'chol Atzrichen, and she rents out the balance scales to people in the market, to vendors in the market that need to weigh things. The Schar Muat, who the income produced from that is very small, Umisbaze Ishtoi Al Schar Muat, and his wife, the man's wife, she exposes herself in the market, in the public, and there's an element of something demeaning to that, all for some small income. Now, just an editorial note or maybe a prefatory note would have been in order here, and that is there's a concept, and it's something that maybe is hard for modern man to accept, but there is a great deal of feeling associated with the idea that's expressed in the pasuk Kol Kvoida Basmelech Pnima, that the woman's honor is Pnima, inside, meaning the less public exposure a woman has, the greater the honor for her, that is. And by way of analogy, before the analogy, that which one holds to be very precious, one does not flaunt in public. If a person, let's say, owns expensive gems or other precious artifacts, he keeps them in his safe. And the fact that one has items in the safe, that is a reflection on their value. And traditional Judaism, almost you might say, places the woman on a pedestal in the sense of the great honor and modesty that we associate with a woman. And therefore, Rashi is explaining that the fact that the woman, as opposed to a man, the fact that the woman has to circulate in the marketplace renting out an item and with all that yielding a very limited income, that is considered a bizayon to the woman. And the We would not say the same with regard to a man who is doing that, and that's a function of the concept of modesty that heightens the honor due to a woman. Once again, for those of you who are imbued with certain modern Western approaches to these matters, that might sound a little bit unusual, but nevertheless, it's something to think about. And the whole concept of modesty most often manifests in areas like dress. If one thinks about even contemporary royal figures, female royal figures, they appear in public in a rather modest form of dress. Again, the form of this concept of modesty, covering up, and everything that goes along with that is actually alive and well to this very day, and people appreciate it and they see it. And they would not want their queen, for example, to appear in public in a very poorly clad fashion. All of these different concepts, they tie in one to the other, the concept of modesty, and as Rashi says, for a woman to circulate in the shuk, trying to rent out a limited yielding item for the benefit of others, would be a bizayon, a denigration of the woman and her honor. So, as a result of that, you can understand a person will not see any profit from that. The Tosfos he quotes the Rach and says that the maskulta, first Tosfos says maskulta has to do with weaving, and Tosfos explains that the bezoyon associated with that, or actually it's associated with spinning wool, in very likely in public, the spun wool was then sold by weight. So the word maskulta technically means something that's weighed. In Hebrew, the tuf and the shin would interchange so that you would have mishkal in this word, something sold by weight. Spun wool is then sold by weight, but the spinning process involves the rolling up of sleeves or the exposure of one's arms, and that would be considered a bizoyon to the woman, also in lines of our comments made earlier. The source made reference to rechayo, a grinder. What's the eino roa simin brocha from that? Agrosa. Agrosa is the renting out. If a person thinks he's going to profit by renting out a grinder, so Rashi says, schar rechayim, shemaskirin, that people rent out their grinders, torach godol, schar muat. What this very, either he's renting out the grinder or he's offering his grinder in service to others, where people will pay him for grinding their items. Whichever way, Rashi describes this as, this is a torach godol. There's a lot of energy invested in that, and very little pay. The Gemara goes on and says, avol avdo umizavno ashtabuchi ko mishtabich lo kro. A woman who produces articles for sale, as opposed to that which we've described till now. Till now we've described renting out articles, whether it be renting out the scales or renting out a grinder. That is Einoro Simin Brocha. But a woman who manufactures, who produces articles for sale, that is quite praiseworthy. And not only that, but the verse praises, Ishtabuche, Mishtabuch Bokro, means the verse praises that, Dechtiv. The Pasuk says, Sadin Osasa Vatimkor. She prepared Sadin. Sadin are as fabrics or sheets for sale. And this Pasuk is familiar to maybe many of you from the passage that is known as the passage of Eishes Chayil. Some people have the custom of reciting that or even singing that Friday night. So in that passage, which describes the positive attributes of a woman, on the literal, if you take it literally, Eishes Chayil Mimtsa, and in that the woman of valor, she is described as one who produces sheets, works with fabrics, and produces them for sale. So the distinction has been made between renting out versus made for sale. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamistakir Bekonim Uvekankanim, one who profits through konim. Konim are thin sticks. They could be reeds or poles. They're used for making fences. So one who profits through konim uvekankanim. Kankanim are barrels. Or large jugs. Eino ro'asim in bracha li'olam, will not see profit from his efforts. My time, why? Why is that? The Gemara answers: Kevon de nofish apachzaihu. Since these are large items, the reeds are long and they're often sold in bundles, very bulky, and jugs are also large items. Shalta behu eina. Another fascinating reference to the effects of what we call the ayin hara, the evil eye, things that attract attention. Rashi says the ayin, that's ayin sholetus plan, but in general, things that attract attention are to be avoided. And as far as what is the connection between these things, so some might approach this on a mystical level, but there is more than just that. You see references to ayin hara, the ayinah, the ainah, in many halachically based gemaras, to the extent that this figures even in practical halacha. So to relegate this to the realm of the occult might not be doing service to this area. An explanation that I heard many years ago is much simpler to understand, that when you attract attention, you also can arouse jealousy. And even in the Ten Commandments, we see the warning against that phenomenon. Lo sachmod, do not be desirous of the next person. So that if I conduct myself in such a way that I attract attention and thereby cause other people to become jealous, to become desirous of what I have or what I'm doing, so I'm causing them to stumble, to be nichshal in loy sachmoid. And as a result of that, so I am indirectly causing them to violate that mitzvah. And as a result of that, I too deserve, punishment. So that if I am causing someone else to stumble on that that avera, so I therefore will suffer loss as well. We continue. Tanu Rabbanan, Tagre Simto Umegadle Bei Modako V'Koytz Silonis Toivos V'Nois Nemeinim B'Chelik Yofa Eino Roesim In Brochel Olam. Another list of items. Each one must be explained. The Gemara itself says, my time, why will he not see a simin bracha from these things which we haven't explained yet? The tohu bei inshi. It arouses the amazement of people. Once again, along the same lines as attracting attention, arousing amazement on the public causes oneself his own loss. Let's go over these items. Tagre simta. These are people that sit in public markets and sell their wares. Rashi says on this, v'ayin sholetes, when we dashed underline this in the Rashi, you're attracting by virtue of your location and your method of commerce, you are attracting attention. Megadli beim adako, people who raise light cattle. That's a reference to sheep and goats. The tendency of these animals, and this you can see much more extensively in Maseches Bava Kamma, the tendency of these animals is they graze in other people's fields. They're not like cattle. Cattle, which are, generally speaking, there's much closer supervision when it comes to the the grazing of heavy cattle. But with regard to light cattle, behemot daka, namely sheep and goats, they wander off and eat from people's fields, and that irritates, it arouses the ire of the community, of the masses, and everyone screams about them, about how, look what your animals are doing. So, of course, if a person affects the public in a negative way, he will not see any profit from his whatever income he derives from that. The Koitzitse Ilonas Tovos, this is a reference to people who cut down. In other contexts, Ilonas Tovos is a reference to fruit-bearing trees. That might very well be what it is over here. Rashi doesn't spell that out, but Rashi says, Koitzitse Ilonas Tovos lemochron le'etzim, he's cutting down, we'll assume he's fruit-bearing trees for their wood value. Ha'kol temein mal'izin aleihem, people are amazed at that and speak ill of that. What are you doing? You have a nice fruit-bearing tree and you're cutting it down just for its wood value. Umitoch kach, Rashi says, ayin sholetzes ben, v'tzakas b'nei olam. Here you have those two elements that we mentioned in regarding the previous examples. Here you've got a combination of the ayin hara and the irritation of the masses. And the last one of the examples in this list is people who are noisim aneim b'chelik yofeh. Rashi says, "Kishechokim imacherim tamid magpidim li tochelik yofeh." These are people that when things are divided amongst groups of people, and he is present, he's always seeking out the best part, the best piece. People who behave like that will, as it says here, "Eino roesim in brochel," and they will not see benefit from that. And why? So the Gemara says, "My taimo the tohu beinshi people." This arouses the amazement of people. Tanu Rabbanu. We continue with another source in the same context. Arba prutos ein ben simin brocha liolam. There is prutos, literally, or coins, but it's a reference to four sources of income that a person will not see profit from them. Schar koisvin. These are people that are hired to be scribes. They write. Including in their profession is the writing of tefillin, mezuzos, sifrei Torah, schar meturgimonim, people that are serve as a meturgimon. A meturgimon is a person that when the local rov was delivering his public lecture, and the public lectures were delivered on Shabbos, so he would deliver his lecture, but someone else would stand next to him and serve as a human PA system, a human microphone, a human public address system, whose voice would carry and would be heard by the masses. So he, the person who functioned in that capacity as the meturgimon, the pay that he receives from that is what's referred to here as ein ben simin brocha li'olam. Schar yisaimim. This is money that one profits from orphans, where there might be products that is owned by orphans, and he will sell them and share in whatever profits there are. So he's, as we said, ein b'lem simin brocha, and umois habois mimedinas hayam. This is Rashi describes as someone who profits by money brought in through his boats. Rashi says, "Midas ha'am mishalech sfinoisav tamid b'mokam sakona." Whatever profits he gains, it's through shipping, and ships travel on high seas, and high seas is a place of danger. So the Gemara goes through these four these items and explains. Bishlamo schar metugman. I understand why schar metugman in Ein ben simin brocha, mishum demechzi kischar shabbos. It looks like someone who is making money, profiting from work done on Shabbos. One is not supposed to profit or derive an income on Shabbos. So, being that his performances on Shabbos, it looks like he is experiencing, is benefiting from Schar Shabbos, which is forbidden. As far as how he is allowed to get paid, that is something that has to be dealt with separately. But simply to render services on Shabbos and get paid for that, that would be something in and of itself that's not allowed. Here the Gemara's expression is demechsi, it appears as Schar Shabbos. So how he is actually allowed to do it, and in a heter way, that is something that needs to be explained further. But the impression that he creates is one of doing something forbidden. Umois yisoimim nami, the profiting off of orphans as well. The problem there is lav b'nei mechilo ninu. If you happen to take even a little bit more than you have coming to you, they are not capable of being mochel. Mochel is to be forgiving, to overlook, which in general commerce, even if you, let's say, you take a little more than you have coming to you, there is room for the owner or the other party, the partner, to be mochel. Yisomim are minors, they're orphans, they're young people, they don't have the ability to be mochel. Mois abos minas hayam, the problem there is mishum delav kol yom misrachish nisa. It's not every day that a person experiences a miracle. The idea being here is that to expect one to have his boats return safely and soundly all the time is really depending on a miracle, and therefore a person shouldn't expect to see profits from that type of income. Elo schar kosvin mai taimo. Regarding the first of the items in this list, the scribes, the sofrim, we call them the sofer, schar kosvin, why is that ein roasim and rochel yolam? Amri b'shua ben Levi, esrim v'arbas, chof dalas, 24, tanios yoshvan shekines agdolo, al kosvi sforim tul mezuzos, the members of the Great Assembly, the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, they observed 24 fasts concerning the scribes, the Kosvei Sforim, Tefillin and Mezuzos, those who wrote Sifri Torah, Tefillin and Mezuzos, Shelo Yis Ashru, that they should not become wealthy. In other words, they observed fasts, a form of, we'll call it prayer and fasts, that heaven should intercede and not enable them to become wealthy through their writing. Shilmoli Misashrin, if scribes would become wealthy, ein kosvin, they would reach a certain level of wealth and say, I'm not going to work anymore. And if that were to happen, so there would be a limited number of these articles produced, and the public needs Sifri Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzos on an ongoing basis. So as to create an incentive to keep producing, they prayed that they should not become wealthy. Tana Rabbanan, Kosvei Sforim Tefillin Mezuzos, the scribes who write these things, Hein v'Tagarein v'Tagarei Tagarein, they themselves and their merchants, here you have a chain of commercial activity where you have the producer, you have a wholesaler, you have a retailer, that's the different chain, the merchants, and the merchants sell to other merchants, v'chol ho'iskim b'mlecha shemayim, and all those who are involved with heavenly related matters, mitzvah related matters, lasui mochrei tchelis, this comes to include those who sell tchelis. Tchelis is tzitzis. Einon royin simen brocha li'olam, they will not see Simon Brocha, great prophet, from their activities. V'im oiskin lishmo royin. However, if their preoccupation or their occupation is done with pure intent, in other words, people are writing Tefillin and Mezuzos and Sifri Torah because they're motivated that the public should have these items, so then royin, then they can merit seeing great profits from their activities. And the explanation is revealed in the Rashi. Since they are doing so lishma, they will continue doing so even if they become wealthy, because what's motivating them is not the accumulation of wealth, but rather making sure that the public has enough of these for their needs. B'nai Baishan, Baishan is the name of a place, Nohu Dolo Havu Azlin Mitzur Litzidon B'malei Shabbat. They practiced, restrained themselves in traveling from Tzur to Tzidon. They lived in Tzur. Tzur is the name of a place, and Tzidon is another place. They wouldn't travel from Tzur to Tzidon on Erev Shabbos, on Fridays. Now, Rashi points out that the Tzidon market day was Friday. So you have these people that were exercising restraint because it was Friday, even though it would be at great expense to them. Here they're foregoing selling their wares on market day. Also, Banayu Kamei Rabbi Yochanan, the children of these B'nai Beishana, like a younger, the next generation of these people, came to Rabbi Yochanan, Amru Lo, and they declared, they said to Rabbi Yochanan, Avoson Efshalhu, our fathers were able to restrain themselves from traveling on Friday to the market, the Tzidon market day, because Efshalhu, they were able, they were people of wealth, they had their own wealth, and it wasn't so important for their survival to market on Friday. Anan lo efshalon, my, we though don't have, we didn't inherit that wealth, or wherever, whatever happened, they don't have that wealth. What are we to do? Amaluhu, so Rabbi Yochanan ruled. Kvar kibla v'sechem aleihem, well, your forefathers have already accepted upon themselves this minhog, this practice of not traveling on Fridays. So, and there, that binds you as well. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Shema b'ni musar avicha ve'al titoish toiras imecha. This pasuk is saying that the ben, b'ni, must heed the teachings of his father and the practices of his mother. This is the pasuk that serves as the basis that gives, we'll say, a sense of authority to what we call minhagim, or custom. So one is bound by the custom of his forebears. B'nai Chozoi Nagi Demifrishi Chala Me'arozo. The people of Chozoi, B'nai Chozoi, have the practice of tithing arozo. Arozo is, Rashi calls orez. Orez, we can assume, is a reference to what we call rice. Chala is a tithe removed from dough. Dough made from one of the five grains that are called dogon. And the five grains are include wheat, barley, and in English they translate the others as spelt, oats, and rye. But the orez, rice, is not considered a grain. It's a separate category of growth. It's not considered dogon. And yet the people of Chozoi had a practice of doing from their rice dough, they made flour and from rice flour, and made they baked things from that, and they tithed their rice products, that they removed the challah tithe. Now, as we said, that is not something that the halacha requires, but yet they had this practice, this minig, this custom. Asu v'amru lei the Rav Yosef. This was then told to Rav Yosef that the B'nai Chozoi tithe rice. Omar luhu. Now, we have a triangle marking on the side of the Gemara. We have the Nosei Mivneh, the topic heading and structural note, where we've written Shnei Gishois, two approaches, Eich Litiaches, Lanoshim Shefrishu Chalo. How to relate to people that separated the challah tithe al ma'afei orez, the eno chayv b'chach. They tithe from rice goods, even though it's not obligated. So Rav Yosef, upon hearing this, he was very upset, and he said, Nechla zor ba'apayu. Let a non-kohen. Now, challah was a tithe given to kohanim. That's when challah is tithed from dough that's obligated to be tithed. they were tithing from rice. So Rav Yosef says, let a non-Kohen eat it in front of them. That would be the ultimate in repudiating what they practiced. Esve Abaye. Abaye raises an objection. How can you say that? How can you disparage their practices in their face? Devarim, does it not say in the following source, Devarim Hamutarim, Vachirim Nogamon Eser, things that are allowed by letter of the law, but there are those that their custom is to restrict, to be restrictive, to ban it, not to practice that which is mutar. So, Iyata Rashoila Tiran Befem, you have no right to be lenient or lax in their presence. So, what you have here is you have people that are doing something. They're tithing their rice doughs, which is something that need not be done. In other words, that challah that they tithe is something that's mutter for everyone to eat. It's not something that has any holiness to it. And yet the B'nai Chozoi treated it as if it's something that is usher. And the halacha says at the top of Nun Aleph Omen Aleph, Iyat Torah Shoylat Yerofim, you're not allowed to practice leniency in their presence. Omar Loi, Rav Yosef responds, V'lav mi itmar alom Rav Chisda, is it not so that Rav Chisda said concerning this source that said Iyat Torah Shoylat Yerofim, that is Bekusoi. That's a reference to the Kusi people. Now, the Kusi people were those, was a nation that converted to Judaism, but under very questionable circumstances. And they were very lax in their practice of Judaism. So, in their case, if they happened to accept upon themselves a stringency, we say it should only be that they should behave in a stringent fashion with regard to whatever. So regarding them, we say don't treat lightly that which they accepted upon themselves as a restriction. So as far as Rav Yosef is concerned, that source has validity with regard to Kusim, but not with regard to the B'nai Chozoi that we are talking about, those B'nai Chozoi who separated challah from their rice. The Gemara asks, Kusoi maitaimo? The Kusoi, why is it that we said that you can't be matir in their presence? Mishum de misrichi milsa. That means that they will, if you end up being lax, they will continue the laxity leading to all kinds of sins. Misrichi is to continue in a wrongful way. That's the svora, why in the presence of the kusim, don't be lax regarding things that they accepted with restriction. Well, that idea, that logic applies here as well. Hanoch Inshinami, the B'nai Chozoi, they're not learned individuals. And if a czar is going to eat the challah tithe that they remove from their rice, Sarchi Milsa, they are going to come to see that there is really no necessity in tithing, because the tithe would go to a kohen, and if you're going to have non-kohen eating it in their presence, they're going to see there's no necessity to tithe the rice, and they're not going to tithe things that are obligated in tithing as well. That's this concept of sarchi milsa. Therefore, the question remains on Rav Yosef in allowing a non-kohen to eat the rice challah tithe of the B'nai Chozoi. Elo Oma Rav Ashi. Now Rav Ashi offers his approach to the issue of taking challah from the rice. Chazinu says we evaluate. E Rubon Oirez Achli, if most of the people eat rice, in other words, their staple food is the staple food of the masses there is rice. Lo nichlizor ba'payu. The Nazar should not eat the rice tithe that they remove. Because otherwise they'll forget the existence of the phenomenon of challah altogether. So it's of great interest for us to preserve the knowledge of challah to begin with. So therefore, if the majority of their dough is made from rice, then treat it with that respect. Ve'i rubon dogon achli, if the majority of their baked goods is from dogon, the wheat and barley grains, then nichlo zar b'apayu, then we would prefer that a zar would eat their challah, their orez challah, their challah tithe from their rice, because otherwise, if they get the impression that the rice tithe is a legitimate challah, dilma osi lafrushi min achiv ala poter umin apoter ala achiv, we're then afraid of something else happening, that they will tithe from rice in order to exempt their grain doughs. And we're talking once again in a situation where if the majority dough that they eat is dogon, and if they see us treating the rice as if it were dogon, they'll think that you can tithe from rice to exempt the dogon. And that is totally out of bounds, because the rice is something that is exempt. You're not allowed to tithe from that which is exempt in order to exempt something else that is obligated in being tithed. And the same is the other way around as well. If a person removes a challah from something that's obligated with the intention of it serving as a means of exempting something that's not obligated, that too is creates a problem. Rashi explains this on the third line from the top. Mafrish min orez al adogon ochel tevolim. A person who ties from rice to exempt grains, thinking that his grain dough is exempted, ends up eating something that's untied. The lochal hashem al haorez. The term challah does not take hold with regard to the rice. The lo niskan adogon, and the dogon thereby is not fixed, is not considered tithe. A mafrish adogon al orez. Likewise, if a person takes off from some untithed dogon and declares that to be challah to exempt orez, ma'achil tevel akein, he's then the grain dough that he gives as challah, which was designated to exempt rice, when the kohen eats that, he's eating something that is tevel. Shein hashem challah la dogon b'shvil ha'orez. The term challah doesn't set upon the hunk of grain dough that he gave to the kohen because of the rice. Shere eino mechuyov. The rice isn't something that's obligated to be tithed in the first place. V'nimso shein zu challah ela tevel. And then that which he's giving to the kohen from the grain dough is something that itself is not tithed and forbidden to eat. So as far as this last section of Gemara is concerned, we saw the B'nai Chozoi tithing their rice, they removing challah from it. That upset Rav Yosef, completely upset Rav Yosef. But the Gemara then questioned Rav Yosef, being that the B'nai Chozoi were ignorant individuals, and if you are going to treat their orez tithing lightly, they will not tithe anything. Rav Ashi had a different approach, saying we have to look at the situation more closely, establishing our practice, our way of treating the rice challah, as dependent on what the majority of the people in that area ate. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that if you're interested in being in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.